You're listening to You Talking to Me with Big JD, where I talk to everybody about anything and everything, a different guest and a different topic every week, right here on the All Talk Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to You Talking to Me. I'm your host, Big JD, on the All Talk Radio Network, alltalkradio.net. And today we're talking about income properties with Sam. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Hello, Big. JD, that must be, right?
That's right, yeah. So let's start off with maybe asking you how many years you've kind of been involved in income property, the rental thing, landlord.
Well, if I could sum it up for you, probably all my life.
Okay. Yeah. How's the structure maybe changed in this kind of business over the... Is that what you refer to as a business kind of thing?
It is a business entity.
Yeah.
It is a...
Or do you consider it like more a personal thing? Like, you know, I have some property that, you know, I rent units out. Or do you actually consider it a business and you know what I mean? Like a sole proprietor type thing or however that is?
Well, it's in my situation, because I actually live in my apartment. I'm owner-operator, is that what you call it? I live in and I manage and own and conduct a business. And
I think we'll get into that a little bit more later, but is that, is it a little bit different as far as the business end and tax time and all that kind of stuff by living here as opposed to if you actually rented and didn't live in a place?
Well,
for selling.
The government looks at it as long as it's a legal threeplex or fourplex or duplex, if you live in one half, that is deemed your personal portion. Your personal portion is 50% if you're in a duplex, or if you live in one out of four units.
Yeah,
your personal portion is 25%.
Okay.
The rest is like a business. 75% of the business is non-personal.
So is the structure any different like today as it was like, you know, well, you've been in this since you were born. So I mean, when you were a little kid and renting, no, but I mean, you know, over the years, have things changed much? Maybe like rules and regulations and things, and maybe we'll get into a little bit of the Landlord-Tenant Act later, but are things pretty much the same as far as...
Well, there's been a lot of changes as far as tenant rules and how you treat the tenants.
The agreements and things, you have to make changes to those as time went on.
If you don't get everything you exactly want on paper, it's deemed to, it defaults to the Landlord-Tenant Act. Like if you say no dogs or no cats or no animals whatsoever,
right,
then you have to get them to specifically sign. It's in a contractual state, you know, that you have to get what you want from your tenants, like certain activities. Like if you want no smoking, you have to consider that.
I was under the assumption that at some point in time, or whether that changed or not at any point in time, that you weren't allowed to specify no pets or no kids or no smoking.
Oh,
you can actually do that.
You can do anything you want.
I thought that was like discrimination against people of any kind.
Yeah, no, you can't discriminate against creed, like, religion,
right.
And this and that.
But you can't against smoking.
Activities, yeah.
Oh, activities, okay.
Oh, yeah, like even smoking. Smoking now is becoming, it's getting in the crosshairs where people that smoke, if they're in a common building, they're looking at changing that rule too as far as the overall health of the people in the remaining part of the building.
Right, you have to take that into consideration, I guess, and whether or not other people would not want to rent because somebody else smokes in the...
That's right. They'll grandfather the people that are already in the units. But I mean, if any new people come in and they catch you smoking... they'll say, no, you can't smoke in this building. There's other tenants in the building. We all have to breathe the same air. So it's almost those smoking rules that are governing restaurants and businesses are going to...
Right, I guess that's
are
going to
govern residential, which is probably one of the more heavy issues these days.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a lot of properties or only the one that you're in? Or do you have you had more in the past?
I've managed, not owned, but managed up to 5 different multi-dwellings in the course of my life. But now I'm just the owner of one, but I still manage others.
Were they house type family. Or apartment type? Like, what would
duplexes.
You consider?
Yeah, duplexes and 4-unit buildings like this one here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you consider this more of an apartment building than a
anything below anything. 4 units is considered to be residential. If you get up any higher, then it's
commercial,
multi-unit commercial. There's different levels.
So, what's really the difference then between the residential commercial as far as renting? You know what I mean? Say you have a duplex that's only 2 units, and that's considered residential? Even if you don't
sure
live
is.
In it?
Yeah, it's for it's taxation purposes.
Okay. And then if you have 3, 4, 6 plex thing?
If you go up past 4, I think your tax base goes up to a commercial rate, which is almost doubles your taxes. So that's why you have a lot of
okay.
Like
so that's their law to make more money, basically.
Basically, yeah. They just they had to get cap a place over multi-unit dwellings, but a lot of different things apply to that. Then you go into the fire code, where things have to be a little more stringent because you got more bodies in the building.
Right. Okay.
And that's what they look at. You know, the government and all the powers that be.
You have to have a slide out the back balcony so you can just slide.
You got to make sure. Yeah, you got people.
Could you actually use a slide as opposed to having a fire escape or something? Could you have a slide?
Oh, JD.
Or no.
You're being funny.
Well, I'm curious, actually.
I like the parachute technique myself.
Asking the questions that listeners might.
You got plywood parachutes. You just pull a string.
Or what do you call the one there that you attach the thing to you there and with the rope thing?
The rope ladder?
No, there's a name for that, actually. I can't think of it offhand.
We'll do that at another...
Some kind of pulley system, but but could you use a slide where somebody could just slide down the back?
You know, I don't think you can. No, I'm pretty sure you can't use anything like a slide.
It would have to be a ladder type thing or stairway type.
Look at the size of some of the people and gravity is their enemy.
You'd have to have a nice rails built up on the top of the slide.
Not a bad idea. Maybe they'll come up with it after this.
What are your preferences as far as types of property? Do you prefer the duplex, or the residential, or the apartment type?
Well,
I suppose a lot of reasons would come into play as far as, you know, how much more upkeep and work and stuff, but do you prefer a particular place?
Bigger is better. The four-unit style is probably the most economical because you got the economy of scale. Say you got like four tenants and you lose one tenant, you basically, you're 25% at a loss, whereas if you're in a duplex and you lose one tenant, you're at a 50% loss, you know. And four-unit stays below the commercial designation cap, so it's the one you'd want to like live in and manage your tenants because you have more of a hands-on approach to things, and you don't have, you know, like the slumlord concept. Because if you live in the building, you generally take care of it like it's your own residence, and these people are kind of like your roommates,
and they know that you're there,
They like it. They like feel safer when you're around. You know, like they know that you're right on task. You know, they don't have to call you and wait a half an hour for you to show up.
It's sort of twofold, I guess. That the fact that you're there, they might not cause some issues or problems that they might have if you weren't. But
did you ever see the movie The Super with Joe Pesci? And they forced him to live inside one of his apartments.
Oh, and it was
because it was rundown place. And the judge
I never saw that. It's called Super.
The Super.
I have to.
Yeah, it's an old movie. It's kind of describes that idea. Like, it forced you to live in the conditions that you have your tenants live in, and then you can see more eye to eye with what they're. And I think more of an empathetic approach.
Pretty good concept there for a movie.
Yeah, because the landlord's got a bad rap, thinking, oh, you know, hey, just come here, take your money, and go. No, I live here too.
Right. Like, and when you are looking for an income property, is there anything in particular that you kind of look for, watch for, as far as a place to use as an income property or rental? Is it the area or the condition? Well, and I'm sure there's a bunch of different things, but what would be something that might really catch your attention?
Yeah, I know what
about
you mean.
A rental place.
When I'm looking, and usually if you're in this line of business, you're always looking at what other people got, and you know, you kind of compare what you got, you know, keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah. Same thing as a men's washroom, but no.
Yeah. Well, you look, you know, and you sniff out other people and how they're doing business. And I think that's how they gauge anything in this world, to see the overall look of how other people are doing things. And you see how you keep your property. If it's clean, you look at other people and you see if they're keeping their place clean. If they put a sign on the lawn, why are they selling? You look into things a little more, why things are the way they are. Like, why is that person spending all that money on that place, making it look nice?
Yeah.
Oh, they must live there. But why is that place run down? Well, they must live out in the burbs. And
it really gets your mind turning there about all the different things that to look for and wondering why.
Why look for why people are the way they are? And some people just...
And that's got comes into play as far as... You know, if you were looking at a potential place to know why they're doing this or why they're...
Yeah, it's a people place, believe it or not. People have to live in these places. And if you're going to involve yourself, you say, well, you're going to involve yourself with people.
Right.
It's not a machine. It's not like you're buying into the stock market where it's just you put your $10,000 out there and you're invested.
Yeah, no, it's a piece of...
You want a percentage.
Tangible.
Yeah, you don't see nothing. You don't talk to nobody. Yeah. All you do is you're dealing with a computer. Whereas here, you're actually dealing with people's problems.
And you own cats, something. Dogs, it's and something that you got to take care of.
People's livelihoods. You got to supply them a roof over their head. So you're in a...
Did you ever have a place, actually, that you just like had rooms and you rented it out to whoever, whenever, you know what I mean, kind of thing, like just to generate the income or that kind of stuff? Or you
I've been approached yeah. by immigrant types, probably people that weren't
for
legals.
Your place that you have or to do.
No, actually here, and I've been approached by people that were wanted to step outside the rules and not really rent the apartment itself. Maybe just grab a little room in the basement, you know.
Okay,
just want to. They'll say, "I'll
try
be happy."
Steer away from some of that.
Yeah, steer away from the legals. Here, I'll give you $50.
Has anybody ever done that and then said that, you know, oh, he's not letting me rent because I'm such and such? Have you ever run into things like? We'll get a little more into stories later of some kind, but
yeah,
there must be all
like
kinds.
I remember a situation specifically. Recently, was an Oriental lady.
Mm-hmm.
She was looking to just get a place and put her people downstairs. And I thought, you know what? If I was like a little nefarious in my thinking, I would have said, yeah, just shoot me a couple $100 and just you guys just hide out down there. And
yeah, but you never know what's going to happen. Then
if
later.
Something happens, you know, and the fire, if there was a fire or somebody's smoking and they burn out, so I got 100 little Vietnamese down in the basement, you know, and it's like, what are these people doing here? Oh, they were living there. So well, then you're at fault.
So you say no, nobody comes back and says, you know, you're just not letting me because I'm of this descent or anything, or you don't.
Yeah, but I'm saying no because you got to get an address and it's got to be a legal apartment and then it's got to have running water and a toilet and a kitchen and I can't go outside that because
it's just certain situations that you definitely want to avoid. We're going to have to take a break right here and we'll come back to more fun with Income Properties with Sam. Okay, and we're back. I'm your host, Big JD, on You Talking to Me, talking to Sam about Income Properties. I want to talk a little bit about first-time buyers and first-time buying. Been doing this for a long time, and you know, I don't know what your situation is with maybe first time buying a house, or if it was a you know family type thing and that sort of thing. But like for a first time buyer, is it something you recommend getting into an income property?
Okay,
and maybe your first time buying and living in, as opposed to you know renting from the outside.
Okay, somebody that's green that comes in.
Exactly, is it too much fun to handle? You think?
Well, you're going to learn quick, I tell you.
Right? Yeah.
Careful what you do. Careful what you ask for.
Uh-huh.
You're gonna get it.
Okay.
You're gonna be in there, bricks and mortar, right to the roof. You know what I mean? You better have tools. You better have a network of people that you can tap into to help you do things because things
are
gonna
happen.
Reading,
perhaps.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You better read. There's a lot of stuff you can read too about first time buyer. I mean,
I imagine the internet's got a lot of information
Yeah, and my understanding is people that I know that got into this as their first home, and they've done very well. They've done nothing but, you know, they had good stories to tell because they've benefited. Because basically, all you need is your money to get your foot in the door. And if things
work if you got the money, you're in.
In the optimum sense, you got your foot in the door money, which is your down payment. And then optimally, your tenants should be paying the mortgage. And you just take from Peter.
So
and
in
give,
concept,
give it, to
it sounds really good.
In concept,
but
it's good, but it goes down from there
the
because then you got to get the surprises come in, so you better be ready. So
it's
you have
to keep all the rules of having a
contingencies better be covered. Yeah,
yeah.
But in the optimum sense, yeah, you feasibly say like you got somebody that's been in your place for 10 years paying rent. And you live in one half, and say you got a duplex, and
the idea is probably pretty good. It's paying your mortgage.
They're just giving that money to the bank, so your roof is covered for basically your down payment.
So would you say it's better than, at least even for a first-time buyer, that you maybe live in one of the units and rent out the other one?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Stay in there.
At least to start out.
Stay in there and get, you know, just get your feet wet and feel it.
Mm-hmm. What about changes in rent itself? Maybe how often, how much is it, like, the increments, are they, you know, is it a pretty steady thing over the years?
It's gauged to...
Is it...
inflation and whatnot.
Do you normally change that as time
goes?
I
don't have to charge increases in rent every year. I can I got a good tenant. That could be like a marketing thing that I could do for my tenants. I could say, you know what, you're a good tenant. I'm not going to raise your rent. It's up to me. It's like,
yeah, would some people in the same building have?
That's something I can remind them of. It's like little PR stuff that you can do with your tenants.
Is it same for anybody, though?
I like you, and I think you're a good tenant, and I could raise you $25, but I'm not going to, so just keep doing what you're doing, and then they tend to like you, and they say, oh, you're taking care of me. You're not trying to gouge me. So they stick around, and that's a good thing to...
Is that usually the same for everybody in the same building kind of thing, or some people a little different than others, depending on the situation, maybe?
Some people, you don't like them, and you want to give them a reason to leave.
Yeah, I'm doubling your rent.
Yeah, you know, and if you don't raise it...
And I'll take your firstborn.
Or the next year, yeah, you can proactively raise all the rents that you hadn't raised for 3, 4, 5 years.
But there is some type of cap, right? You can't just charge anything.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the range of like 2 to 3%
And how does somebody get the Landlord-Tenant Act? Is it just readily available over the internet from the government sites or
sure is.
That kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's an Ontario Ministry of Rent Control.
And that'd be a great thing, obviously, for somebody who's renting and owns the income property. But what about tenants? Would you find that a tenant's ever come to you and say, well, the Landlord-Tenant Act states this, I know my right, and blah, 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 blah?
Sure.
Are they up on that pretty
well,
much?
Sometimes they will be more than happy to remind you. Sometimes yeah. The tenants have more education than the landlords because...
you get back, run back home and say, I got to look this up.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories as far as that is like tenants. Like it's almost like some of them are just, they hopscotch around and they'll go in a place they'll hopscotch. Yeah. They'll come in, they'll give you a little bit of down payment money, they'll live. And then they'll look for a problem. You know, those are the bad tenants.
And that's what I want to ask you about. You might not know that they're going to do something like that right up front, but do you do like normally you would do a credit check and all that kind of thing? Or would you just kind of take some of it for face value? Or are you more serious about that?
I've been pretty lucky, and I usually just go with a good old-fashioned handshake, and it's a very bad thing to do, and I know. And that's something I learned from my dad. But you can look pretty much at them and gauge. Mm-hmm. On a person-to-person level, where you're going with it, because sometimes they got good credit ratings, but they still got evil intentions. So it's a gamble.
Yeah,
you're going to gamble with people no matter what.
So your dad was kind of involved in the income property thing as well.
He came to this country and he brought me into it, and I learned it just by watching him. You know, mm-hmm. and through default, I think it's what do you call it? It's my destiny. I don't know.
Well, he was probably doing it for a while himself then, and I imagine that you had a good teacher, probably.
Yeah. No, I think he learned the hard way, actually, but a lot of the Europeans came over
here. But when he passed
here.
That on to you, that's good. That, you know,
sure did.
He knows all the downfalls and the things to look for out for this and that, yeah.
He went through them, and I watched it, but, you know, they talked. A lot of everybody talks, you know, these old guys, you know, they go around, you look at them, they're just, you know, they're owners of these buildings. You wonder, hey, you get Europeans, you can't speak English, and you can't, but yet you own these buildings, you know, how do you do that?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, we live in this country, and my dad used to talk about that a lot. He'd say, oh, you guys speak English, and you got a good education. We come over here with our farmer attitudes.
And take over.
And we take over. Yeah. It's like, and they look at you as an enemy or something, but yet they just had a passion for
I think sometimes the Europeans will come over and are more willing to, like, take a chance on certain businesses.
Sure,
than, like,
had
a lot
to.
Of people here.
It's the land of
and that's why they're not owning. You know, like somebody from here might not own the property because they don't want to take the chance, or they're too.
First thing that you say is this is the land of opportunity.
Yeah.
So in order to have the opportunity, you got to have some land. No.
That's right.
So get some land and go. If you don't have land, you shouldn't be able to
go wrong. Take out the of there and you got land opportunity.
Land opportunity.
There you go.
Oh, it's very...
I want to move into a little bit about the buildings and the units themselves and things like that. What about the fixer-upper? Is that like a good idea, you think, or is that...
Beautiful. If you're
the time fixer, and the money, I suppose. And
if you're the fixy kind of guy, in this day and age, there's a lot of cool tools, man. A lot of ways to get the job done real quick, you know, like as opposed to like the stuff from... 20s, you know, or 20 years ago and 30 years ago, it was harder
to
do.
A lot more manual labor to take care of things.
A lot more harder to fix things. And now anybody can pretty much grab a hammer and a saw or whatever and a tool and just put up some walls or do some wiring. You know, the system now, you got your Home Depot, box stores and that.
Right, yeah.
Everything is all self-explanatory. You got a lot of information out there. Anybody can do pretty much... The fixer up.
Isn't there a motto, you can do it, we can help, something like that?
That plays into the landlord.
Pretty much anything can be done now, and they rent just about anything that you need, too. A lot of cases, don't they?
Exactly. So there's so much stuff available right now.
You don't necessarily have to buy everything.
You just got to want it. You got to have a passion for it. Once you've got the passion for it, you got direction, you got to be able-bodied, and put those two together, and you've got a formula for success.
And what about selling for profit? I guess like the fixer-upper thing, sometimes some would fix it up to rent out.
Sure.
To make their money, but some would fix it up to sell.
That's what experience would dictate. If somebody just ran through there and did a cover-up job, you watch out for that, because you can, a lot of people, if they're going to fix something up, they're not going to put their wholeheartedness into the, mm-hmm. you know, the closure of the quality. You know what I mean? Like I said, if you live in the unit and you live there and you take care of it like it's yours, you'll do a little bit more better for it. But if you're doing arm's length work on a property and you can see that and they just come in and they rifle, some people are actually really good. They're construction workers and they could feasibly do a very good quality job and leave a very good building. and do that, but you have to be knowledgeable in construction methods to see where they can go wrong.
Would you recommend then home inspection?
Home
type
inspection,
stuff?
So, very yeah. good. Yeah,
I just recently did a show with
very worth it
John Binder, Binder Home Inspections, and it was very interesting. You know, he's quite knowledgeable in the field, and a little plug for John Binder right there.
Binder, get in
but,
there.
Yeah, I guess that's something you would suggest for.
Oh, yeah. Just grab your remote control, plug your TV on, watch Homes on Homes.
Homes on Homes. Oh, that's right. The guy's name's Holmes, isn't it?
Oh, his name's Holmes. Yeah, watch him for a few segments. He'll get you rigged up.
I'm sure some of the biggest things that you'd look for, especially with a potential income property, the plumbing, electrical, stuff like that, they got to be pretty important things. Is the old knob and tube thing history now? You can't even have that stuff anymore, can you?
Not necessarily. You could...
Is it depending on its condition?
It depends on when you tie into it. Everything's got to be up to code. When you tie into it, you got these junction boxes according to code. They allow it as long as it's not disturbed. Mm-hmm. If you go in there and you disturb it,
right,
you got to cut it off. If it's grandfathered in to a point.
Mm-hmm. What about yards? How important is that with a rental property? Is it important to have, like, you know, backyards for tenants, and especially with a unit
work
that
for
has
you.
A, yeah, I
well,
guess.
I mean, that's why people rent. They don't want to have to deal with the yard. So, you know, that's your job.
Right, and that's something I kind of wanted to get into.
Grab your rake and go. Yeah.
Do you do all the work, maintenance work, or do tenants ever say, oh, you know, I can shovel in the wintertime if you want, or I can do this, or, you know, if you want me to cut grass, I'll do the grass.
That's the arbitrary part of being the lord of the land. You know, you can...
Lord of the land.
Some people like to work out deals. And
Isn't
say,
that
hey.
A trilogy? Oh, no, that's Lord of the Rings.
No.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, tell them to dig up the grass. There's a ring in there somewhere.
So a couple points on that. If you
could trade off rent for labor, because you got to pay out money somewhere else, and sometimes you can get the tenants, if they're a little cash starved, you'd say, hey, you want to shovel the snow, knock $20 off your rent, and they'd be out there, they'll do the best job.
Yeah, I got a couple
motivation
points on that I want to ask you about, but we're out of time for this segment. We're going to take a little break and be back right after these fine messages. Okay, we're back. You Talking to Me with Sam on Income Properties. I'm your host, Big JD. We were just talking about tenants maybe doing some of the work around the place, maintenance, shoveling, whatever. Would that be a stipulation in the contract or anything? Or would you sign something with them state that, you know, they're going to do that now
like
for the rent?
It's almost like that thing with the handshake deal thing. Because what if you think about it, like, well, what if somebody gets hurt?
That's my next point, exactly.
Then, what if somebody gets hurt? Well, I was trying to work off some rent, and now I got hurt, and I tripped and fell on your sidewalk, la, 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 la. You know, you end up in a big quagmire. Some people will shy away from that. So no, you pay your rent, and then I'll do the business. And we won't muddy the water. It's up to you.
You tend to stick that way?
Usually, I've had tenants that did work.
Or do you leave
me.
Stuff down there, maybe like some salt and some stuff? And, you know, if somebody comes home and sees it's icy, they can just throw a bit there or something.
It's readily available, sure.
But of course, that you'll,
obviously,
you know,
they
take
probably,
care of it.
Depending on the character of the person, they're probably just going to, you know, they're going to look at that as an opportunity to get on my nerves, whether they like me or not.
Is right.
The big difference. Like, see, if they like you, you know, they, you know, you take care of them, they'll take care of you.
Yeah.
Like I said, if you have their interests in mind, they're going to take care of you. It's a symbiotic relationship between your tenants and yourself. It's almost like you got to treat them like family. Treat them with respect, and they, God forbid, they might just give some back.
What about basements? Basements are much of a problem as far as like, you
below
know, flooding.
That's hitting below
like
the property line.
Yeah, exactly.
Basements, yeah. And well, basements, some houses don't have them.
And is it important as far as like storage and things like that? Like, do tenants appreciate having storage around the unit?
Oh, yeah.
I've
had people comment they like the fact that they can put stuff down. Or me, I got coin-op laundry down there. Anything that makes their life easier, you know, so they don't have to go around. And there's another business opportunity.
Great selling points.
Yeah,
as far as
me, they can just put a couple quarters in the machine, get their stuff done. They can stay in the building. They don't have to wander around the streets with their laundry. Yeah, but the basement storage is good. It's important. Or a garage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good to have everything available for the people. You know,
and as far as like the maintenance,
more legitimizes.
Sort of back to the maintenance kind of thing, brick, siding, painting, all that kind of stuff. You know, you kind of prefer something that's a little less maintenance, I would imagine.
Remember like the having story a brick of the building. Three little pigs?
Oh, yeah. Huffing and puffing, painting their wooden siding.
They all ended up in the brick house, didn't they?
There you go, yeah.
There you go.
So I guess brick's the way to go.
Brick it up.
From ground to roof.
That's the way I was brought up. The brick is the best, but
whatever's
I might be wrong. There's a lot of you got a lot of.
I guess if you just want to be a slumlord and you're renting out rooms to 20 people and the that kind of thing, I guess it wouldn't matter what it's made out of. You just patch it back up and
bring in
some more people.
Yeah, I jump in my Cadillac and go down the road a little bit.
Yeah,
look at it. Looks better from a distance.
And what about things like windows and doors? Are they of much importance, or do you put any emphasis on, the fact
you're talking
that
about
it
energy,
might look nice or have
energy
more
conservation? Like if you're paying for the heat in the building, there is a there's an onus on there to keep your doors and windows, up up to par. Because if you got one heater heating.
Yeah, either you're going to be losing money, or tenant's going to be losing, whoever pays for.
Yeah, or they're
somehow
just going to, even if they're paying their hydro or gas, that furnace is going to run and run and run and run and run and run.
Right,
and that's your machine. Mm-hmm. So they're just going to break it prematurely. So,
oh, that's true too. Yeah,
there's a lot of
that. You think about the money and the fact that everything's running, but you don't think about the upkeep of something's going
to
go wrong.
Yeah,
maybe
you want your furnace to be utilized as least as possible.
Don't let them run air conditioners in the summertime.
No,
no air.
Careful
of
the water.
Careful. Don't even use the plug. I cover all the plugs up in the summertime, so you can't plug
you
in.
Gotta watch. You gotta watch what's going on. You gotta monitor the activity in the building, because it's a dynamic thing. It's moving. It's breathing. It's people. They're moving water around. They're opening and closing doors. They're slamming things. Those are the things that break down the most. Windows, doors, floors.
Right, all the moving parts.
Everything that where the hands and feet come into contact.
Isn't that Murphy's Law? If it
can't break it will.
Yeah.
Damn right it will.
Yeah.
Yeah, be ready when it does.
Do you find yourself going through fairly long stretches of not really having to do anything? Like, you've obviously kept things up here that's in really good shape.
I'm crossing my fingers and knocking wood right now.
Yeah. Great. So you go through a nice stretch of time where you don't have to deal with this and don't have to deal with that.
Well, because I did the work. So
that's
I know what
it's
falls apart.
And then it's done quality. You do quality work.
Yeah,
I
already know. It's like, even if I don't do something right or I don't tighten a screw as much, I'll know what's wrong because I tighten that screw. So, the phone rang and I forgot to tighten that screw.
Right,
and then
exactly,
you go over
yeah.
there and, it's like you become intimate with every screw and nut and bolt and nail in the place.
Okay, so that sounds a little weird, but.
Oh, yeah. It's weirder.
Let's move on to a little bit of the business aspect as far as what that entails, being like a sole proprietor, partners and things like that. You do this on your own, basically?
Well, I got my brother's family partner with me. I just do everything I can do, and where he lacks, I pick up the slack, and then I just pick on him after. But
you partner with everything, or you do some of it on your own? Is there anything that you just...
Well, you could work it out where it's like you can have a list of chores. I don't know. You do this and I'll do that, or we do this and we do that.
Is it easy? You find easy enough to deal with family, or does it make it difficult? Or
it's either really really easy and everybody's on task, or it's really really hard. You're butting heads and there's a sign on the lawn for sale. You know what I mean? It can go one way or the other, and it's a bit of a emotional thing when it's family.
Take some work there too, as far as
there's a lot of family businesses that are really very successful because they're cohesive. They have the same brain, and they work together and they're not trying to chew at each other. Then some families don't get along so well. Some people are better with their friends. Business partners, all the way. It's what do they say? The united you stand, divided you fall. That applies.
Yeah. So that you feel that way, you wouldn't really want to just take things in your own hands somehow, or have your own.
You can, as long as you have a mind for it and the patience and the tenacity. You got to be tenacious about everything.
And here's one: what about renting to friends and family? What do you say on that? Because I know a lot of people say it's not a good idea. Don't mix the business with
friends and family. Yeah, I've had situations where I've had friends and, well, as far as renting to family, they're gonna probably. It depends. Why do they need to rent to begin with? Obviously, you got to look at everyone's situation. Just like were looking at a tenant. Why are you here?
Yeah.
Now, how come you're not owning a house? Mm-hmm. How come you're not doing like I'm doing? Well, obviously, there's a bit of a thing going on with you. Mm-hmm. So then you got to look at that. So why is the person in the situation that they're in, and govern yourself?
I think that it would be better to turn a friend down as far as rental than have situations arise from renting and owing you money. And
depends on the vacancy rate.
If you really
got an empty unit and your friend comes over and sees you've had an empty unit for 2 months and they says, well, I really need a place right now, and and then they hash out some cool.
Then maybe they don't have the money to pay, and then you can't get him out because he turns into not a friend and says, you know, well, I have rights because I live here now, you know. And
well, there's a cost for everything, right? Yeah. There's a cost to learn how your friends are.
That's why I would think the way of maybe it's better just to say no and leave it at that than run into lots of other problems. But I guess it can go.
I've heard lots of stories where friendships have gone awry.
Yeah,
you know, because of sort of accommodation arrangements. Where they're good friends from a distance, but when you bring them in close, the closer you bring them, you know, you get up in your nose hairs and arguments start.
I think you must have to cross that bridge when you come to it, I suppose.
Especially when somebody
really think about that.
That close, you know, to mm-hmm. your, you know, to your business and yeah.
What about money direct from the government? Is that good? Is that bad? Is that cool? You know what I mean? When somebody's on welfare maybe or something like that and you know that the check's going to come in from the government and you don't have to worry about the like...
There's a system. I've heard of it. I've never done it, but people that are on welfare...
Sounds good too in theory. Though.
You actually... You get the welfare people contact me, the right. social workers and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They contact... So I'm on a first name basis with some of these workers and they want to know the scoop. And they say, okay, are you renting? Yes, I'm a legal landlord, and it's a legal apartment, and they're legally my tenant. They're going to give me this money. You know, you can work out a deal where the money goes to you first,
yeah,
and they get the shake out of it. Because half these people are in this situation because they don't know how to handle money or whatever. So you say, well, what's the first most important thing in your life is to get your housing covered. So you get that covered, and...
Yeah,
you know, I would just. You need to eat. You go to the mission or whatever. Or yeah, get a job.
You got to pay for your place to stay because you need your place to live.
And that's out on your ear.
The most important, yeah.
Especially in the winter, you know.
Is it easy to get rid of somebody? I mean, if they default on the rent, you go through the proper steps, and then
pretty straightforward. And, yeah, you don't pay, you go.
Because sometimes you hear these horror stories that tenants have all these rights, and the landlords makes it so difficult for them to even get rid of somebody because you can't just put them on the street or whatever the reason, but. I would imagine you go through the steps and
well, no,
if you can't pay the money and you need to get somebody else.
The money is
that's the bottom line.
That's the bottom line. If you don't pay, and if you don't pay on time,
because you're paying for a service or whatever, you develop
a track record, and if you don't pay on time, like you schedule the first of the month, you got to have that thing paid.
Okay.
By the end of the first day of the month, if you don't have it paid, you're in a default. Even if you pay it on the second day. Now, it's my position to make note of that. It says, okay, late in March. Okay, so April comes along. If you're late one day in April, okay, that's two times within 6 months, you're out of here.
Yeah.
If you're late, it's just like being late for work.
So you hear that, folks? Pay your rent on time. We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this. So we were talking a little bit about money direct from the government. Are there any government incentives to have income property? You know what I mean? Does the government say, you know, we'll help you do this or fix up? Or if you're going to rent to folks that are on welfare and that don't have money or people that come in from another country, those kinds of things, would they help in some way? Or
well, they've got a system called affordable housing, and that's a government entity. The government is your landlord, and they supply
but that doesn't work.
Property.
That's government-owned and operated, basically.
If you apply for affordable housing status... That's a different entity altogether.
Would that give somebody the okay to rent places like that? Like, can someone like yourself get involved with affordable housing and rent places, or is that just government done? Like, that's not any incentive for you to do anything there.
JD, I have never come across that, and it's a good question, and I probably researched that myself.
So the government doesn't really offer anything to someone like landlords to do any.
No, I'm on the market rent. I give people market rent.
Right.
They come here, they pay market rent. And the market takes care of my tenants. Whereas the affordable housing thing, you have to qualify that. And I think it's subsidized by the social services department, some special arm. People that are in that obviously are familiar with it, but not me.
What about advertising? What do you do when you get a rent up? Do you put a sign out front? Do you advertise in the paper?
Yeah.
How does that work? What do you do?
Well, I like I said, it's in the market situation where I got to target the people that I feel that are best suited. And I just make up flyers and I'll target certain groups. Like maybe if I want, you know, somebody with decent incomes, I'll go to
I was going to ask
hospital.
You, do you go to certain areas?
Yeah, I'll flag pegboards at the hospital, you know, like people that work at the hospital. They're nearby here. It's a big institution.
What about the auto workers?
Auto workers?
They got some cash.
Yeah, some of them do. A lot of them don't, believe it or not. No, as far as targeting areas, well, it's just like a market situation, you know? Like, mm-hmm. you can do anything. You can buy some airtime on your show here and
there
advertise.
You go. But then you get swarmed with, and you publicity. Can't. You won't even have time to choose.
That's okay.
You know.
But nowadays, publicity, any publicity is good publicity as far as, you know, getting your word out there. And
have you found any particular medium is the best?
I find the Windsor Star or the newspaper, anything you just advertise in the newspaper.
Because I'm aware of this newer thing, Rent for All, I think it is.
Oh, yeah, there's, you know, those websites.
Some of that stuff help? People can go and look at the picture or something? And
Right. I don't have a lot of turnover, so I haven't really gone into that.
Yeah,
the internet part
pretty
of
pretty much long term.
But I know if I do get a vacancy, I'll probably look at that.
Look
little,
at all the options.
Later,
yeah,
that's new technology now, and it's
makes that's right.
Sense.
What do you think about the internet as far as technology for?
Actually, it's from what I hear, it's actually good for tenant relations. So you're going to get a tenant that has internet. If they
email,
have internet,
contact,
it means they have their affairs somewhat in order. Oh,
okay,
they have internet,
mm-hmm.
So they're probably a little bit of an upper scale tenant. Say, okay, you've got access to a phone. You know, you're not delinquent with your phone bill, so
yeah.
You've obviously got internet.
You're a little up with the times.
Yeah. You're more tech based. You know what I mean? It's a little bit of a scale up as opposed to somebody that's eating
internet?
Out of garbage cans.
Just
something.
Out of curiosity, do you supply internet in the building or no? Is it just their own?
Yeah, I do person? Actually. If anybody wants
good.
It, they can flag me and I'll give it to them.
Yeah,
that's
pretty good.
Part of the little freebie I give.
What if like someone like myself doesn't live here? Could I call you up and get you to get me internet too? Pay
well,
for my internet at my place?
I've heard situations where actually satellite TV was a big kicker up in BC. I think there was
big to have
building
the
owner. They had one satellite dish and they were getting satellite signals and giving cable TV to their tenants as a bonus. But I think they got into a CRTC rules and they got shut down.
Yeah.
But as far as offering up internet, that's just like supplying water.
Things as simple as having music playing in a doctor's office, they come down at one point on that kind of stuff. It's because, you know,
it's a
personal thing, but you're giving it to others. And what about when tenants don't pay?
Bye. The bus leaves every 20 minutes.
We talked a little bit about it, but yeah, you just go through the steps and
yeah, it doesn't
game
take
over.
Long. Within 21 days, they're out of here. It's
that's
just a matter of
the time frame of whatever you got to take care of, the notice.
You get your notice. Like I said, if you're delinquent within two times in 6 months, then you've developed a record of non-payment of rent, and that's the most important thing because mm-hmm. banks need their money. I need to give them their money.
Yeah, everybody's waiting for the money if it's late.
And it has to get paid, so you got to go.
What about like business expansion of some kind? Is that something are you happy with what you do right now, or are you always... You've mentioned that you keep your eye out. So do you always or occasionally look around for something that is always a possibility there?
Oh, yeah. Because I know what leverage, it's about leverage, really.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've developed a comfort with what you're doing, you can do it.
And
if you can do it here.
What would work and what
if you can do it here, you can do it anywhere. And
you
just keep redoing, overdoing what you're doing. And but be wary because you're going to deal with more and more people, and more people, more problems. So
just out of curiosity, in your particular situation, if you kept your eye out for something in particular and saw something that you like, now do you go to the partners there and discuss things, or do you ever look at anything and say, I take that on my own?
Well, there's a business case. You got to have a business case. You know, like you got to look around. You says, well, why is that building for sale?
Right.
Look into it. Maybe go knock on a few doors.
But
what happened here?
But if you were into this particular place that you you had your eye on and you liked the situation, would you go back to the partners?
Well,
as
sometimes,
or would
sometimes
you look at it for yourself? You know what I mean? Is it?
Well, like I said, be careful what you ask for. Your life's as complicated as you make it. You're going to be really busy.
So, in other words, you think that
get
I can
ready.
Take this one on my own? Then you're gonna take on a lot probably. Or for somebody especially that's newer.
That's how hungry you are. Yeah.
Exactly.
But
okay.
There's a lot of money to be made in real estate mm-hmm. if everything works out right. Just look around.
What about tenants overall? Is it, do you kind of enjoy dealing with them and working with them?
I like to treat them as
people person.
As family and friends. I like to be as, accommodating as I can with them. I don't just gun them down for the rent and walk away. No,
right,
I actually talk to them as people. And you know, warm up to them as much as can, because you know what, they are people. You know what I mean?
In every
sense of the word. So
do you kind of find in them like maybe what as far as their situation, reason why they might not buy a house or
that's
you know,
right. That's why they're tenants.
Yeah,
that's why. That's why they are where they are, because they can't go any further. Okay. Some of them do.
It's pretty much the same for everybody, though, really, like that rents?
Some of them move on. I've seen people that come and go, and they move on. They go on to better days. Some guys that go on and do the same thing that I'm doing here.
Some are just happy with renting. There's nothing else. Like they don't have the mortgage, and they don't have this and that, so they just pay my bill.
Those kind of people. And those are probably the people that are they're going to pay you every month that are just content to just be where they are. But there's different types. There's like every color of the rainbow in your tenant class. But I just, you know, sometimes I don't worry about the tenants. It's the tenants' friends and relatives. And, you know, they start bringing too many people over. And then you got a building full of people, you know, and they're living vicariously through these people. And you got to watch how they conduct themselves.
Well, speaking of that, what about, like, subletting and things like that?
There's a limit, and it's the fire department. You know, I have a. They govern how many people are in the building.
Is subletting only somebody else renting to someone because you're not there, or is it subletting renting to other people, like bringing other people in to live that weren't normally there?
That's if I had like a yearly contract with somebody and they wanted to move out 6 months into their contract and they just wanted to give their apartment to somebody else.
They would do that.
Because they're bound by contract with me.
Yeah.
So they...
And they're able to do that?
They could, but then I'd have to...
You still have to approve. Do you have the last word?
Oh, yeah.
They can't just get somebody and say, you know, I'm allowed to get somebody.
Well, they can try, and then I've got a fight on my hands if I don't like what's going on.
And what about if they just want people to live, like, you know, a couple moves in and, you know, everything's cool, and then 6 months later they have some friends move in and live there, stay there. Does that matter, or would it maybe only matter if you were paying utility type thing?
I'd be surprised. Like, I've had situations where you've had whole families come in and they just slowly ingrain themselves. They start going in there. It's a matter of what they're doing. If they're making a lot of noise day after day, and then it gets over to a week, and then a week.
But as far as bringing more people in, that's...
Next thing you know, my hydro bill's going, or my water bill's going through the roof, and then I have something to say. It slowly chews away at me, and then I start... What do they say? The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Give me the most outrageous or comical story as far as being in the business that you're in. Like, you must have come across some doozies. Something for the listeners.
I got sued one time by a lady, and she sued for illegal rent, and it's something my dad did, and I had to account for, because every year he raised her rent. He just told her, you know, the rent's increased for 2.5% this year. I'm only going to increase it 2%. And then he rounded off to the nearest number. He says it's 2.7 this year, so I'm going to increase it 3%. He rounded off to the nearest dollar, and, you know, all zeros, which is just convenient, you know, when you're, you know, you don't want to pull out change. So he just made it convenient. He did that year over year over year. After 12 years, he'd been doing that. So she got swift, and she said, you know, all those times you raised it to 3% and it was only 2.7%. He goes, that was, you went above, you rounded off to the higher number instead of the lower number. And then after further inspection, she went to a lawyer and she found out that he never gave her any paperwork whatsoever. He just did it like handshake agreement, and she agreed to it for 12 years, and he thought he had a decent tenant. And we found out that Every single increase was totally illegal.
Okay.
It was totally illegal. We had to pay her back all that money.
Wow.
She moved in. She was paying $325 a month. And then at the end of it all, she was paying $550. We had to treat her for the 12 years that she was paying $350 for 12 years. Every single rent increase.
So there's no record?
Wasn't done on paper.
He just kind of figured it out soon.
Yeah. And he just shake hands. Okay, it's going up $20. Okay, it's going up $22. And she got a brain. She got smart, and it kicked us in the ass.
So did you get evicted after?
She was gone, yeah.
There you go.
We moved into that place ourselves. And, yeah.
Well, we're out of time, Sam. I really appreciate you being on the show. It's been very interesting, and I'd like to thank you. I'm Big JD for You Talking to Me on the All Talk Radio Network. We'll see you next week, folks.
You've been listening to You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD. A different topic, a different guest, every week, right here on the All Talk Radio Network. For more information, visit the website, www.youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking, the number 2, me. youtalkingtome.ca.